Hey everyone, and welcome to Flightcast. I'm Jason Rosewell, and with me is Skyhawk Heavy. This is the one and only Infinite Flight podcast. And Mark, did you know that Flightcast is also on YouTube?
I do now.
I'll be producing a short film on a recent flight that I took with my friend Cam Murch here in Ontario in his Murphy Rebel. So you can all look for that soon at youtube.com/flightcastaudio, and there's a little teaser up there right now. We would also love to see you on Facebook and Twitter, so be sure to head to facebook.com/flightcastaudio or on Twitter at flightcastaudio and hit the like or follow button. Today on Flightcast, I'm excited to welcome someone from the Infinite Flight community with a lot of aviation experience to continue our real-life pilot series. Jesse Roberts, aka Speedbird203 on the forum, has flown, well, you name it, and he's probably flown it. He's currently working at Jacksonville International Airport in Florida as the operations manager for military and VIP charter aircraft. Jesse, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. How are you?
So, Jesse, tell us how you got into aviation. Was it in airplanes or was it something else?
I got started in helicopters. I'm from North Mississippi, and one of my first jobs was working with crop dusting and mosquito control. So that's how I got paid in flight lessons. I got my helicopter license, started doing that for a little bit, and just then went into the military in the warrant officer program with the Army.
So Jesse, you're flying helicopters. And how old were you when this was happening?
I started when I was 16. I went into the military when I was 18, and I did 6 years there.
Okay. And
so 24, 25.
All right. So while you're 16, you're kind of getting some experience and you're working for flight lessons, and this is all right. Helicopter.
Yes. Bell 47.
Bell 47. Nice. Okay. All right. So why don't you give us a little rundown of the different types of aircraft you've flown? So maybe just your, if you can, to the best of your knowledge anyway, on through the progression of aircraft.
Okay, well, I got started in a Bell 47. I flew that for a little while. We then got a little Schweitzer or a Hughes 269, which is the same. It's a piston helicopter, a little better from the 47, but not by much. When I got into the military training, they give you a TH-57, which is basically just a low-skid 206 Bell. From there, I went to Blackhawks. I did Medevac Blackhawks in the H-860 Mike model. From there, when I went into Special Operations, it was a H-60 Lima and then a Mike model with those guys. I flew the Little Bird briefly and went back to the Blackhawk DAP Bird, which is basically stands for your Direct Action Penetrator. After the military, I got out. I flew contract work where I flew more Little Birds, or I say Little Bird. It's an MD-500 Delta model. Well, E models with the Delta nose. We just take the air conditioning off, the heater, all of your ILS equipment. We don't need to shoot approaches. We just shoot people. I did that. Hueys. I flew the Mi-24, which is a Russian gunship, the Mi-17. I briefly, we had in the government contract, we had two parts of the house. There was the rotor wing division and the fixed wing division. I was going to make the switch to fixed wing. I got my ratings. I started to fly the Turbine DC-3, or BT-67, the Basler. I've got probably 30 hours in it. I got my type rating in the 737 and was working on our 757 when operational requirements and demand, I went back to rotor wing and finished out my contract work in the helicopter. So in Africa, Iraq, Afghanistan, and some in South America. After that, I had some friends in St. Augustine. I got my ratings. with the extra 300s and the Marchettis, and I flew with some friends. And after that, from that, I started flying in the as a just a guest in the T6 Texan, and then eventually I got written off in the Texan. I got some time in the Mustang. I flew backseat for a little bit with a buddy of mine from the Mustang. I then went to the L39, the F or the CF5. They're Canadian F5s. I flew those and the Hawker Hunter part-time, flying more government contract work. It's like a civilian Top Gun, basically. Well, it's not just Top Gun. We do a bunch of other stuff. Simulated missiles against Navy ships, or we have been contracted out to fly chase work for the QF-16 and other various projects going around. We'll also do range control. There's a range here in Florida, Pine Castle, where we'll basically... we just fly around, and F-18s, the 16s, 15s, or Harriers will drop these dummy bombs, and we fly in and tell them if it was a hit or not. So that's pretty much about it. It's like I said, nothing. It's been a fun little career.
But dang, Mark, it's too bad he didn't get to fly some aircraft in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's really missing out from what it sounds like.
Good grief,
on the
man!
Different types.
Wow.
Now, I got to ask you now, of all the helos, you said that in the Army you flew the Limas and the Mikes on the 60s. And from what I understand, the Mike was the upgrade.
It was.
With more of a glass cockpit and stuff of that nature. I got a buddy of mine that flies for the Army out of Jackson, Mississippi. I forget what that base is there, but he flies the 60s there. And, of course, he's only on the Lima. He doesn't get to fly any of the mics yet. So it was pretty cool just to hear about all that. But of all the helos that you've flown, what's the favorite helo that you have?
Honestly, the Blackhawk. Honestly, I'd have to say the Blackhawk. I was so nervous in flight school. You know, they give us these little jet rangers, and we're nothing at that point. We're just occupied space in a flight suit, you know, and they tell you about power and power and power, and it gets beat in your head, you know, the Blackhawk. And, you know, here you have this aircraft, which is relatively small, but it's kind of a handful. I had never flown turbine. And, you know, I remember, you know, laying in bed at night going, holy crap, man, if I can't handle this little jet ranger, which is nothing, like, how am I going to handle the Blackhawk? And I remember the first time, you know, I pulled pitch, and I don't know, your buddy may say the same. I laughed out loud. It was just the most easiest helicopter to fly. See, the Blackhawk has what they call an MMU, which is a mechanical mixing unit, and you don't even have to use your feet on the torque pedals. You just pull, as you pull pitch on your collective, it inputs the proper amount of torque from your tail rotor to keep, you know, your nose center. And it was just the craziest feeling. I was just like, this is it? And I'm looking at the guy, and I'm just like, this is amazing, you know, like, I'm gonna make this thing do amazing things, you know.
I've heard that. On a previous podcast that me and Jay did, you know, I was talking about, my father was in the Coast Guard for 26 years, and he flew on C-130s most of his career, but here in Mobile, of course, they had the Falcons, and I've got about 25 hours in the Falcon 20 sim, and I gotta get into their Dolphin, the 65.
Yeah.
And this is before they got the 60 sim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a fixed wing pilot, and you would think, Jason and I have talked about this, you would think as a drummer, I would be able to use my arms and my legs, you know, differently and stuff like that. But I cannot fly. I could not fly that 65. He put me on the runway. Let's do a rolling takeoff. And, you know, I try to compensate for torque and everything else, and I couldn't get it off the ground to save my life.
It's an acquired, it's a funny, funny thing. And everybody talks about, see, a lot of our problem, and I'm sure a lot of everybody's problem at Mother Rucker, is that finding your hover button. A lot of guys get washed out because they can't find their hover button. But mine was more academics. I'm more of a, let's just go out and do it kind of thing. Like being stuck in a classroom killed me. But yeah, it's one of those things. You'll either get it or you don't. But the funniest thing is the second you get it, it's like, oh, well, why did I have such a problem? This is easy, you know?
Yeah, it's like a light switch. It's,
yeah, and it's I explain it to people because they're like, well, how do you know how to do it? And like, especially when I was overseas, you know, I talked to some of the guys from our fixed wing division. They're like, I just can't do it. And I'm like, well, good, I can't do what you do. And it's like riding a motorcycle in heavy traffic uphill. It sounds intimidating, and the first two or three times you do it, you're going to stall, and you're going to make a lot of people angry at you. But the second you do it and you get good at it, you're in and out of traffic. You're starting and stopping up and down, and you're not even thinking about it. You're going, outside.
And you're going uphill both ways in 7 feet of snow?
Exactly, with no snow chains. And you know, and you're just like, while playing on your iPhone. So it's there's a lot going on, but it's a really, once you get it, you get it. And honestly, I don't know. You never forget your first, I suppose. And it's all in what you learned. I love helicopters. I can get in a jet and fly and go crazy, but I would trade all of those for just a simple little helicopter. It's just a better, I don't know. It's just my opinion. You see the more.
The closest thing I'll ever get probably to flying a helicopter is just taking my 172, pulling straight back, going straight up until I stall and just kind of prop hang there for about half a second. That's going to be about the closest thing I'll ever get to it.
Well, 172s are fun. We, me and some buddies in Saudi Arabia one time rented a 172 and took a roll of toilet paper with us. And we got to about 5,000 feet, threw the roll of toilet paper out the plane and stall spun it, cutting the toilet paper as we fell down to the sky.
Well, that's one way. I mean, if you're going to TP a house, why not just do the whole neighborhood?
Go big or go home, man.
That's right. That's it.
So a couple episodes ago.
That's a great idea.
A couple episodes ago, Jesse, we had Steve Thorne from Flight Chops on, and we talked just for a couple of minutes about helicopters. And I made a comment like, you know, I prefer a fixed-wing aircraft because if you lose your engine, then at least you've got a glider. And he made he made reference to
auto-rotation?
Yeah, auto-rotation. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so basically what's going to happen is, without getting too technical, basically, you know, you know how a helicopter works. You have your collective. Collectively puts the same amount of pitch on the rotor blades, your main rotor disc. And so, you know, you pull up, you go up, you push it down, you go down, you know. Well, it's sort of the same thing when you lose an engine. You disengage your rotor, if you have one, and you push it to the floor, push the nose over. You want to use the force of gravity to pull the air through your screws, in the same way it would under power, power.
Okay.
Until you get within your sweet spot, and then you just pull pitch like you're going to come in. Usually, if you have the space, you'll do a run-on landing. And if you do it right, you'll come down and you'll set it down smoothly. If you do it too soon, you're going to use all your energy too high up, and you're going to stall and fall into the earth. Or if you do it too late, you're going to fall into the earth.
So basically what I'm hearing you say is you've got to do it right or you're dead.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's a series of falling leaf stalls, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, basically. And the whole time, you know, if your rotor speed starts to drop, push the nose over, and the more, you know, gravity or the force of gravity or the air coming through will speed your blades up. If you're going too fast, you just pull a little back pressure on your cyclic, and then you're basically working the speed while keeping your rotor RPMs going and keeping it up to temp. So when you go to pull, you got it, and you can use a power reserve. And there's a bunch of different variables that, you know, it's complicated and there's no need to get into, but in theory and a whole, that's basically how it works.
Okay.
Yeah, auto rotate's pretty cool.
And I didn't mean to camp out on helicopters for this long, but that's great. I think we should, because this seems to be your passion, and you know, this is good stuff. So when have you had to apply this in practice, or is it all just been in training and in theory so far?
No. One of the reasons why I'm not in no more was because we had a problem, and we had to put it on the ground quick. And basically, it was the helicopter was a total write-off, but we all ran away screaming, going, "Did you see that? Like, did you see what we just did?" But yeah, it worked, you know. I mean, well, we were losing our LTE, which is a loss of tail rotor effectiveness. But yeah, we were within our range, and we were able to put it down where only the helicopter was written off. So it saved my life.
That's a success then. If you're all running away screaming, that's a success.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah I kind of ruined, I think that's what we had talked about, Jason, was when we were on doing the podcast with Steve, but you know, I kind of ruined the whole movie San Andreas for my son when we're sitting here watching it. He's all excited, loving the movie. And, you know, The Rock goes and Dwayne Johnson hits the hover button. And then, of course, doing his auto rotate into the parking lot of the shopping center. And I'm sitting here just analyzing it and telling him, oh, that wouldn't happen. That's not real. That's not. And he's like, Daddy, shut up.
Let me enjoy
Hollywood.
That's the missus. I can't watch movies like that. I can't get past. I'm just ruining everything. Like, this is rubbish. Like, come on. And they're like, would you just hush? Like, it's a movie.
Let me hit this hover button and go over here and work the hoist real quick and go ahead and just do my single man rescue.
Exactly.
I don't care what anybody says. Denzel Washington can fly an airliner inverted. So.
Yes.
I've seen it. That happened.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I mean, in the movie I saw him.
Yeah, the movie. The MD-88.
Yeah.
So good. I didn't even care. I was watching that movie. I'm like, just glued to the screen. I know this isn't real, but I don't care.
Now, if that had been like Allegiant, then we'd have been like, okay, wait, now this is totally wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've gotten the 172 inverted during a graveyard spiral. That was fun.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. I don't lose. I have an iron stomach, but I don't know if I'd be able to handle that, Mark, with you at the controls.
Hey, I've landed every time I've gone up, so I'm pretty.
He's got to be good. He comes back every time he leaves, so he's got to be doing something right.
Yeah,
that's it.
Every successful takeoff should equal a successful landing.
Ish.
In theory.
In theory.
Even if you're running away screaming, it's okay.
Yeah. I remember our door gunners looked at me. He's like, "Smooth, am I hurt?" I'm like, "Do you feel hurt?" Yeah. I said, "What in your heart, dude?" Like, let's go.
Wow. Okay, so let's get a little bit back on track here, Jesse. You mentioned that we mentioned in the intro that you are working at JAX. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what your day looks like?
Okay. Well, a typical day is, I'm getting ahead of myself. So basically where I work, we have three parts. So we have it's an FBO that has the contract to handle the military and the VIP charters or anything that doesn't normally belong, and I'll get into that in a second. So we have our FBO side, which is private planes, Mark and his Cessnas, you know, rich guys, Citations, Falcons, whatever. We also have the commercial side, which are the guys that fuel the airlines that live at Jacks International, like Delta, United, American, Southwest, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
And then we have our side, which is, like I said, the military or VIP charters, which could be your BBJ 767s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 777s, football teams. We have the Jacksonville Jaguars here. So whenever during football season, when the Jags leave or when another football team comes to play them, that's my department. We'll handle that. Or like I said, the military side, anything passing through for gas, anything emergency procedures, you know, they might have to land, or diversions. Like a big one that we get is when weather gets kind of crappy, Virgin Atlantic always diverts up here from Orlando, or British Airways from Miami, or whatever. So we'll have to handle those guys. So, but yeah, it's there's really no town. There's really no normal day. I go to work every day not knowing what I'm going to get into. I, like Monday, for instance, I go into work and I get a call from the U.S. Marshals, Con Air's coming. So, okay, we'll prep for that. So the Marshals will send a 737, and then shortly thereafter, a big bunch of tour buses with a lot of guys. You know, they'll chained up and off they go, or different thing. We had the zero G plane that was working out of our ramp for a while, doing flights for schools and colleges. And
I noticed on Instagram that you actually got to have the zero G experience.
Yeah. That was kind of like as a thank you for everybody. That was sickening. That was weird.
Did you lose your cookies?
Not gonna lie. Jason, I'll do it in the 172 when I take you up.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. I'm in.
Well, it's fine. We've all floated pins and Snickers across to the guy in the back, and, you know, the L39 or the F5, but to actually physically be standing and then off you go, it's a weird feeling. It's like skydiving for me. Like, I've done it a couple times. It was cool, but I just not something I want to do. You know what I mean? Like, I just, no, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I mean, you really have no sensation of falling, but it was just, did it, checked it off. Let's move on.
I called a school one time. I got several friends that do skydiving. And for me, you know, if I know I can fly the plane, it's kind of hard for me to jump out of it. That's just my mentality.
Right.
But
right.
I had some friends of mine that do it, and they try to talk me into it. So I called the flight school that used to be out at Trent Lott over in Pascagoula, and the skydiving school, and was talking to him. And I said, now, look, I'm kind of a big fella, so I need to make sure y'all got a parachute that's going to hold me. And he's like, well, how big a fella are you? And I'm like, well, I'm 6'5", 202 much. And, you know, I'm giving him all this and everything, all this information. And he's like, well, you know, I've got a friend in the Army, or I could probably get a couple Humvee chutes over here and take you up. And I can just imagine they're going to bring down a C-130, strap me down to some pilots or some pallets, and then get about 20, 30 feet off the ground, and then just push me out the back with the chutes deployed. So
what was that movie, Operation Dumbo Drop or something? Yeah. They say he hoist the elephant like that.
Oh man.
I got a funny, when we were doing parachute training, it was basically the same thing. We were in the States, just doing training stuff in between missions. And we have SEAL. Well, we work with the SEALs. So a couple of our SEAL buddies were like, hey, you want to go parachuting? I'm like, man, I don't know. And, you know, he's like, I'm not asking, I'm challenged. I was like, yes, sir. So I guess we're going parachuting. So we get in this airplane, and he's like, look, we're going to go to Warner Robins, and we're just going to catch a ride on a C-130. There's like some Rangers or some Army guys, guard guys. They're going to jump, and then we're going to go. It'll be fine. So I'm like, all right, fine. So we're sitting in this airplane, and, you know, we hit the altitude, the doors come open, the loadmaster's open, everything, lights switch from red to green, and they're go, go, go. And so they all start going. And this guy we call Pickles, this SEAL, is a big guy. And he's sitting there, and he was already annoyed with these, I don't know, these kids from the Georgia National Guard or whatever. And one of the guys stops, and he turns around and says, wait, can we talk about... what are we got to do? Like, okay, so I count to four, and Pickles gets up and just kicks this guy out of this airplane. He goes, anybody else want to talk about it? And they're like, no, sir. And they're like, away they went. They continue with the line. I was like, oh, man, I hope he don't get, he's going at before me. I don't want to get kicked. But it was just like, oh, my God, dude. Like, poor guy, man.
My dad said he had the same thing. I asked him if he ever jumped out of a plane. He said, no, I was pushed the one time I had to parachute down there in boot camp.
Wow.
Yeah, he just, Pickles just got up, put out his cigar, and just kicked this kid right in the chest. And it's like, whoo, everybody on the plane took notice. We were just kind of like, yes, sir. Okay. This is his plane now. Like, whatever he wants, he gets.
That's freaking awesome, though.
Martin, yeah. you were talking about 200 and too much. My family went on a, I'll probably do a little film about this too at some point, but we went down to my local seaplane place that I have some credit with, and we went for a tour around our town and stuff, just with my wife and my two kids. And so we get they've got a scale, commercial scale down there, and they weigh everybody and, you know, do the briefing and everything. So we finish writing down all of our weights on the sheet, and I'm not a very big guy, and my wife is not either, not a very big person, and
guy?
Not a very big guy. And my and my kids are, you know, how old are these kids? 6 and 8 and a half. So
check
we
your
finished,
spreadsheet.
Yeah. We finished doing this, and the lady that's doing the thing, she looks up and she goes, "Jason, we had a passenger last week that weighs more than your entire family."
Wow.
So I wasn't in Canada flying.
It wasn't you, it was somebody else.
No. Oh,
somebody okay. else. But anyway, that story probably
that
wasn't worth telling.
That is freaking hilarious, though.
So, Jesse, you've got your interesting kind of work where you've got maybe Con Air coming one day, and you've got a football team leaving the next day. You got people coming in for gas. Yeah. And then we were talking before the interview, and you said you might just be out playing Frisbee, smoking cigars on the ramp.
Oh, yeah.
And taking selfies and putting them on Instagram.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I've got 15 years ramp experience with Northwest. If you guys are hiring,
yeah, we're always hiring, man. it'd be one heck of a commute, though. I promise you.
Oh, tell me about it.
Then you got to live in Jacksonville. No,
but some days it's just nothing going on, and we'll just fire up the grill, or you just hang out. It's basically, for the most part, the guys are just aeronautical gas station attendants. If anybody's ever worked at an FBO, will tell you it's kind of like a fire station. You know, something comes in, you handle it, and then 20 minutes later you go back to doing whatever it was you were doing.
Right. But at the same time, you've always got to be prepared, right? And you've got your training has to come in handy immediately if something's going down.
Yeah, well, that's like with how one of the reasons I got this job was my security clearances, and because it's not only Con Air one day and football teams the next, I handle the White House flights. A couple weeks ago, we had the G8 summit up in Georgia. So not just the president of the United States, but I think someone, I don't know who, but someone high up from Germany, because a Airbus A310 Luftwaffe came in. I think the guy's name is Juan Carlos, the Prince of Spain. He came in on a Spanish Air Force Airbus. The Dalai Lama even came in on a private 6-7. And so we work a lot with like Secret Service, FBI, NCIS for chiefs of staff and stuff like that. And okay, you know, you're going to come here, your ground vehicles move here, out this gate, away you go. And so it's literally from one extreme to another, you know. I've had days, no joke, where Morgan Freeman will fly in a Carbon Cub, and then in the afternoon we've got the former president coming in to go to the doctor's office. So
oh, wow.
it's from one extreme to another, because we have the Mayo Clinic here, so a lot of people come in for that.
Okay. So what about your are you still flying?
Yeah, I do it part-time. I have some friends that I fly the jets with for government stuff here. You know, it's not much. It's just to keep my license current.
So what
does
that mean?
I've got a kid on the way.
What does that mean? You've got friends you fly jets with. Is there
liberty
to discuss
that? It's all in who
that?
You know. Well, yes and no. It's anybody that'll tell you, like, if you've ever flown in the military or served in the military, it's kind of a weird thing. It's like it's a networking. So, you know, a guy I flew helicopters with, you know, we both get out. Now he's flying for FedEx. Hey, man, I need a job. Call, you know, okay, cool. And he can get you on at FedEx. It's it's like that, you know, it's had friends in high places. So,
right.
You know, it's like, I talked to him and said, hey, and he's like, hey, are you looking to fly again? And I was like, well, maybe kind of, you know? And so, he got me on with this company doing, like I said, just the bare minimum just to keep me current. And, I've talked to the missus before. You know, it's funny. I've never thought about going into commercial. I thought that was a boring life of just, you know, you're just a bus driver. And I know that sounds taboo because a lot of people want to do that. And I'm not downgrading it. And I'm not, there's nothing wrong with it. It's great. It's just not for me. It's not what I wanted.
All right.
But, you know, I've got a kid on the way, and this being gone and war zone stuff is starting to become less appealing. So I think after the kids get a little older, I may go into commercial flying cargo at either Atlas Air or National down. I've got another friend at who flies for National. So, you know, if I've got the hours, you know, he can get me in, so, or I can get an interview. The rest is up to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether I blow it or not, you know. But
Tyler will be happy to hear you say Atlas. That's one of his. It's one of his favorite. He was. I think Mark. He was ferried back by Atlas after one of his tours, right?
Yeah, he came back on Atlas a while back, which is why he loves Atlas so much. Now I actually know I know one of the 747 pilots. I think he's also the chief pilot for Atlas. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've got a buddy that flies for him. And I love Atlas. I'm kind of disappointed we don't have any Atlas paint schemes in the game. Like, I'm a 47 guy. It's like, how could we leave this out? Like, this is such a, you know, it's such a great and iconic aircraft, you know, for the 47s. They've been around since 1992.
Well, you know, such an awesome livery in that.
You may not be disappointed for long.
Jesse, I hope not, man. I hope not.
So,
but he's right. It's all about those connections. You know, I mean, it's who you know. Just like now, you know, I've got to figure out how to move to Jacksonville because I've got a job waiting on me there. It's all about the connections.
Right. There you go.
It's really, you know, and especially in aviation, that's the crazy thing. To be as huge as it is, it's a really small world where everybody knows everybody. And everybody is just a phone call away. And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a phone call. And we're like, hey, you know this guy? And I'm like, this sounds familiar. You know, and we'll talk. He's like, yeah, I know him. He's like, is he good? Yeah, it's kind of a nah. Or yay or nay. And vice versa. I've been checked up on. You know, I've when I got out, I was kind of bumming around and took a couple, you know, sightseeing jobs, you know, or working with the well surveys here in Jacksonville, you know, flying a little helicopter. And you know, I was talking to a guy. I was like, yeah, I know this guy, and I flew with this guy, you know. And 2 days later, I get a phone call going, hey, you applying for this? I'm like, yeah, why? He's like, well, he called me. He's, you know, I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, he's checking up on me. He's like, yeah, no, I wasn't just name dropping. I you know, he said, no, it's cool. You got the job. So, yeah, it really is all in who you know, man. And just don't screw up because it will come back one day. On you.
Yeah. It's like a co-ed fraternity is really what it is.
Yeah. It's such a great fraternity, you know?
It is.
Everybody is such aviation enthusiasts and just great. No one does what we do or what you do or fly or like you guys and podcast. No one does what we do because it's all right. You're 100%. I mean, you go to my house and it looks like an aviation museum. I've got more crap tacked on the wall, and like I've got, you know, taxiway light lamps I made, or you know, a coffee table out of a windscreen from an F-14 Tomcat. You know, and we're all the same. Everybody's in aviation. It's just we're in it because we love it, and this is. It's something great, and I'm sure that's why the guys created this app, you know, because they genuinely love aviation, and, you know, it's what they wanted to do. So, you know, thanks. Nice. Thanks to them. We appreciate it.
Well, actually, let's talk about Infinite Flight a little bit. I know you're not a fan to the extent that Mark and I are. Obviously, we've got Mark now has a job with Flying Development Studio, and I'm in it knee-deep here with the podcast and everything, but what is it about Infinite Flight that you like? When are you normally using the sim, and you know, what are your favorite aircraft, all that stuff?
Well, okay, so believe this or not, I got started in Flight Sim with, well, I'm sure everybody, Microsoft Flight Sim. I don't know if you can say Microsoft with you guys, but whatever, I'm going to say it.
I might beep it out. You never know.
Yeah, it might sound interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyways, I started with Flight Sim 9 and then Flight Sim 10, and it was a great game. And then I got bored, and then I learned about add-ons, which, not having a lot of money at the time, I learned how to create my own. And me and some friends, I've got some liveries and some helicopters on SimViation and Hover Control. And we basically started our own website, and we basically built add-ons for Flight Sim 10. And we're going to start doing that again real soon. And, you know, we would do liveries. And then, you know, I start flying and going overseas and you're getting deployed and stuff. And you're just kind of like, man, I wish I had Flight Sim 10. Like, this sucks. Like, there's nothing to do. I just want to play Flight Sim, you know? It was like, that's my go-to when there's nothing to do. I'll just get on and do pattern work or hover work or whatever, and you know, do little flight plans and go from there. And then when Infinite Flight came out, I was like, yes, this is it. This is a good waste of my time. And I think I downloaded it when it was like 3 or 4 days old, and I bought everything. I've got every aircraft, every region, I subscribe every month, and it's just a great thing. And it's just when there's nothing to do, I'm on it. So if I've got an hour between arrival flights at work, I'm in my desk, you know, at my desk playing Infinite Flight. If I'm at home and, you know, it's 20 minutes before the dinosaur chicken nuggets are done, I'm on Infinite Flight, you know, and little flight plans and stuff like that. So it's great. I love it. It's a great use of my time.
So can we see you flying around on live as what, Speedbird 203, I'm assuming?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know what I look like online. Cause you know, I can, like, if I go to your flight plan map and you click on somebody, it, you know, it has their info. I can't do that for mine. I don't know how it shows up. I'm a 4.7 guy. I love them. So that's 99% of the time, that's what I'm in. Okay. I'm either doing, if I'm in Seattle, because I fly a lot in Seattle at Snohomish a lot. And so if I'm in Seattle, I'll have my tail number will be one of the Boeing. It's just a regular test flight call sign that they attach to them. But I use the solid white -8. With the tail number 458 Bravo Juliet, because that's an aircraft that was originally supposed to have gone to one of the sultans or the kings or a sheik, but he died, so now it's up for sale in Basel. But it's just a solid white BBJ 747-8, so I just use its tail number. And if I'm anywhere else in the world, but if I'm in Seattle region, I'll throw the I think it's like BOE 004. Which was the actual tail number or the call sign for that aircraft during the vet. See, that's how much of a nerd I am.
Wow.
It really
knows no bounds.
No, it really doesn't. It's just, you know, and so it's, I don't know. That's what I use. But yeah, I guess you could see me around. I'm not blocked. I don't have a blocked flight plan or nothing.
Yeah, you know, cool. I
don't know. So your call sign would probably show up as November 458 Bravo Juliet.
I'm guessing, yeah. I don't know, because some people have their names and then their call sign, or like American, you know, 2-23-53, or something like that.
We can enlighten you. When you're at the menu, your name is going to show up in the top right of the screen. Just click that.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I change my call signs. If I'm in Seattle, I'll go to...
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, Bravo Juliet's what's going to show is your call sign, and then your name will show up as your screen name. That's how you're showing up on the game, on the sim right now.
Okay, yeah. So it'll be one or the other. It'll be BOE 004 or November 458 Bravo Juliet.
Okay, so guys, you can go and find Jesse while he's flying around.
It's so great to be able to track flights live and find places to open frequencies where the traffic is in Infinite Flight. Cam is here to tell us a bit more about LiveFlight.
I think you pretty much nailed it, Jason.
Awesome, but there is more to it than just flight tracking.
Indeed. Have you tried flying with a joystick on your iPad yet? The AutoNav feature in Kinect is pretty sweet too, I must admit.
So what's coming next for LiveFlight?
You'll have to wait and see, but let's just say flying on Infinite Flight will never be the same again. Go and check out what we have out now though. You easily spend countless hours tracking flights in Infinite Flight Live whilst doing some proper joystick flying.
Thanks, Cam. In the meantime, everyone, head over to liveflightapp.com for your next flight. Now back to the podcast.
Speaking of the Infinite Flight community, why don't we take a few questions from the community, from Facebook and the forum.
Okay.
So Jesse, Tristan Wolf is wondering, what is the main military aircraft or aircrafts that operate at JAX, and what are some of the operations that they're used for?
Like based?
I guess so.
Or
I,
like comes in? Because we have, okay, so I'll do both.
There's another base, isn't there, somewhere close by?
No. Well, no, it's right on the same airport.
Okay.
We have the Florida Air National Guard, which is the 159th Fighter Squadron, 125th Fighter Wing. They have F-15s, and they're basically here or there for homeland security. They, the only threats that I know that they go after is when the Cubans get a little bit of money and they start flying their MiGs. They don't have really good radar equipment, so they get a little close to the coast. So sometimes... Yeah, I'm serious. So sometimes they'll be dispatched all the way up here to go down. And I know they have a small detachment in Homestead that they rotate pilots in and out of. And so they'll do that. But yeah, that's basically, there's also a C-130 there. And a,
that's what I'm talking about.
Metroliner. Yeah. And they have a Metroliner, which they affectionately call the Reefer Seeker. Because it basically, it has all this crazy camera equipment and radar, and basically you can go out and find drug boats or marijuana fields in the woods. Or it works with Homeland Security, you know, and I think it's ATF or something.
A Metro 3 or something?
Yeah, I believe so. It's one of the real long, skinny ones with the loud Garrett engines.
Yeah, the Mosquito with turboprops.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. This one has countermeasures.
Nice.
Yeah. Really, they have nice. They have those three types of aircraft. They're talking about F-22s, but I don't know if that's just a rumor, and I'm not with those guys, so I don't know. You know, I just say, you know, it's come across my desk a few times about getting the Raptors, but I don't know what's going on with that. On the transient side, we have that, you know, the military that would come over here. We occasionally get a detachment of T-38s from the Air Force. Flight students come in, you know, doing cross country. They'll operate out of our base for a couple of days or a week. The same thing with the Navy. They'll send T-45s, which is, if you don't know what a T-45 is, it's basically... a BAE Hawk. The British use them, and I think other countries may use them too as light attack aircraft. But it's basically just a trainer. It's built by Boeing, and
yeah, it looks like a trainer. I just got one pulled up on the screen.
Yeah, it's here. a single engine trainer. The Ghost Hawk is so. They're around here all the time, being close to Pensacola, and so
yeah,
I always loved them. It's just an awesome looking plane to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and occasionally there'll be a carrier off the coast, and they will send, you know, 20 or 30 of these things to get carrier qualified before they go off to F-18s or E-2s or the C-2.
Awesome.
It's really great. It's a really fun little. It's a fun little airplane for your money. It's a lot of fun. But we'll have, like I say, we'll do trainer, and the same thing with helicopters. The Navy will send those TH-57s over, you know, for cross-country flights. We have NAS Jax here, which is a P-3 sub-base. It's the first base to get the P-8 Poseidon. So we'll have P-3s, you know, stopping here for gas, or they'll get in the pattern, do touch-and-goes. The training squadron for new pilots and the P-8s are here, so there's always something like that going on. We have
P-8
Mayport.
Looks really cool. I've seen it's doing touch and goes out at Gulfport. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a Yeah, it's a great, it's amazing. It's those blended wings, man. You know, we'll, it's such a great aircraft. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's a 700, a 7 or 800 airframe that they
I think it's an 800 airframe, but the wings look like they're off a 777.
Yeah, the raked blended wings. It's a yeah, and it's amazing. And the cool thing about the P8, well, going back to like the P3, you know, it's a sub hunter. So you would have the P3, you know, we could shut down one or two engines, and stay over target for 12 hours, sometimes loitering 100 feet off the water. Well, when they got, you know, when they were replacing these aircraft, they're like, well, the P8 might have to do that too. And so what's really cool about the P8 is if you look at the engines, they're a little more bulbouser. And I, for lack of a better word, or trying to remember what they were called, it was explained they're like turbos, which basically gives the P8 the same amount of power at altitude, because it's basically 737. So, you know, their 737s are meant to fly high. So it basically produces the same amount of power down low as it does up high. And it's just a really cool, it's got a lot of power. They'll come over and do, you know, short fields or missed approaches, and they'll take it to 30 feet and then missed approach, tuck the gear under and point it to the sky and climb like a homesick angel and do kind of like a wing over and get back in the pattern. And you're just like, that is so cool. Like, it's a 737 flying like, you know, it's amazing. It's like an air show every day.
Nice.
Yeah.
So speaking of pointing it to the sky, Arnold's wondering, what is the highest and fastest that you've flown?
I've gone a little past Mach 1, and the fastest or the highest I think I've flown is 42,000 to 43,000 feet, and that was just coming back from just crossing the pond. We just got I wasn't flying; I was just in the back. The highest I think I've ever flown, in control, is maybe 32,000 feet. I mean, I never really had a need to go high and long.
You're not a stratosphere pilot.
No, especially not with helicopters. You focus on the ground with helicopters.
So
I didn't hear him mention U2 in his resume. So
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned
that's classified.
So you were mentioning the T-45, Jesse. That have you done? That's for like carrier landing training and stuff. Have you ever done any carrier landings either as a passenger?
I've done for fun in a buddy's Cirrus at Cecil Field here. They have one of the runways is set up with the rester cables and it's painted, you know, and when I guess if there's not a boat around, they'll go out to the runway and they'll practice landings on the runways first. But I've done a couple on the runway without no gear, you know, just say, we hit it, you know, and then powered off and flew around again. But to physically touch down or catch the wire or, you know, no, I've never done nothing like that.
Man, that
nothing
would be,
that fun.
That would be a crazy, crazy feeling, a landing or taking off.
That would
off.
Be stressful, yeah.
Oh, man.
That would be a little stressful.
So
that's on my bucket list to do in the 172.
You could do it, man.
Mark, you could lift the 172 off of the deck of a carrier and not go anywhere.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If you got the right headwind, you just pull back and go with it, man.
Yeah, man.
If I can get a 130, a C-130 on an aircraft carrier, I can get the 172 on there.
Well, you know, they've also landed the U-2 was on the USS America. And when the F-111 was coming in, they landed the Aardvark on an aircraft carrier. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think it was originally built for the Navy, but they ultimately passed on it.
Yeah, it went to the Air Force.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the C-172 off of an aircraft carrier, guys, go after you listen to this podcast, go and search YouTube for float plane takeoff from concrete runway. There's a couple of videos, but there's one from Canada, from Saskatoon International in Saskatchewan, and this Cessna 185 is on the back of a trailer, and
I've seen
yeah,
that.
That's the one you sent me before.
Yeah, I sent it to you last week.
Yeah, I've seen that happen at Jackson International.
Oh,
they
really?
Have a,
nice.
Yeah, they have a little air, like a radar, a radio and engine shop, and there's a guy that comes in a Piper Cub on floats, and that's what he lands and takes off on it. They pull the little trailer out and go out there and get him. And then it's the craziest thing. And we just pick it up, you know, and set it off, and they work on it. And then when he's ready to go, he just unstraps it from the trailer. They drive off. And
how does he land it?
He's I've never seen it land. I've only seen it take off. So one of the guys told me he comes in really early in the morning and he lands it on the grass.
Oh, okay.
And right off the side there. I'm just kind of like, I don't.
I mean, I've heard that if you're in need of, you know, obviously a road works as a runway if you really need one. And I've heard from a pilot who had his Piper Super Cub on floats that if he had to land on the road, it really wouldn't be the end of the world for his airplane because the it would hardly do anything to the floats. Not that you'd want to make a habit of that, but
no, it's a bad look.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's move this along. We got to wrap it up. Ice Blue is asking on the forum, have you ever made a serious aviation mistake or had an embarrassing moment?
Which time? Oh, man. I've done
just
a lot.
Pick your best.
I've done a lot. One that sticks out in my mind was I was telling some guys a rather embarrassing story, and we were all kind of, you know, trading, you know, well, that's nothing, you know. And on the helicopter, you have your flight sit, you know, it's like a push to talk. You squeeze sort of, you know, one click and you can transmit to everybody, or you can double click and it transmits out. And I wasn't paying attention, and I had the whole thing fired off, and I told everyone in the airspace my story, and when I was done, people were like, "Who's that? You know, identify yourself." I'm like, "No, we're getting out of here. Like, I'm not talking on the radio no more." And there was another time; it really wasn't aviation related. It was in the fact that we were. It was before a mission, and our flight suits on our left leg. There's like this little knife pocket, and you know, we're in this at the talk in this meeting, and you know, it's serious. You know, there's these commanders and generals, and we're standing around, and I don't know what happened, but he's like, "Give me your knife." And I was like, the general, he, you know, looks at me, he's like, "Give me your knife." I'm like, "I don't have a knife." He's like, "Well, what's that in your pocket? There's something in your knife pocket." And I just looked down, I said, "Well, this is where I keep my Twizzlers." And I pulled the Twizzler out of my pocket and bit it. He's like, "Get out of my hangar!" And like everybody is like, "What is wrong with you, man?" I'm like, "I don't know. It's where I keep my snacks, man."
So that's why you were in for 6 years on leave.
Yeah, exactly. CW2, that was it. Yeah.
Because you had to take a bite of the Twizzlers.
Yeah, a lot of times we would all, we all have the things loaded down with snacks.
You should sell that too, Twizzlers. Maybe you can get a commercial out of it.
But no, they won't. They don't want no part of that, I'm sure.
Mark, do you have anything else for Jesse before we let him go here?
No, man, I've enjoyed it. It's definitely been interesting and informative as well as entertaining. So I appreciate you taking the time to get on the podcast with us.
Yeah,
anytime, guys. And if there's a question, man, my Instagram is speedbird203. You can find me there or just send me a message. Don't be afraid. I think it's such a great thing that we, you know, when I was coming up in aviation, and Mark, I'm sure you were too, if you had a question, you had to find somebody that knew about it, or you had to go to the airport and, you know, you had to put in the work, or you had to go to the library and check out a book. Now,
or pull out the world book.
Exactly. Now, yeah. Or now, you know, I think it's so amazing that we live in a world where if you got an aviation related question, you can just pull up your phone anywhere in the world and you can reach me, you, Mark, you know, and just ask direct. Hey, you know, don't be afraid to ask. One of the things that really grinds my gears at the forum is it seems like a lot of people are, it's like, I don't know. They're more interested in correcting and, you know, getting on to somebody, which I feel like it kind of does more harm than good, because someone's like, well, I'm not going to ask because I don't want to get blasted. But, yeah, you know, preach. If you guys got a question, just don't be afraid, man. I don't care what it is. You know, there's no, I'm not going to bite your head. It's just cool. I'm here to give back, man. So awesome. Any just message, yeah.
Guys, you heard it from him. You can find him on the forum, Speedbird203. That's at community.infinite-flight.com. And you can find him on Instagram at Speedbird203. So Jesse Roberts, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I really appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
And I also want to say, while I've got everybody here, Mark has been, over the last, well, bunch of months, really, Mark's been dedicated to being on this podcast and helping me out as co-host. And so I just want to say thanks, Mark.
Oh, man, not a problem. I say thanks. I love it. I enjoy it.
I say thanks to you all the time, privately, but I just wanted to say it on the podcast. You make this podcast better. And especially on a show like today's, where we've got Jesse here, who's, you know, he's a military guy, and, you know, I'm a Canadian pacifist, so what do I know about the military? but it's nice to have Mark here to kind of fill in the gaps,
run and interference.
Ask some good questions, run some interference. Yeah. So
thank you, man. Thank you, brother. I love it.
So guys, that was Jesse Roberts, and he joined us from Jacksonville, Florida on Skype. Thanks as always for listening. If you haven't already, head over to the App Store or Google Play and download Infinite Flight. For more of the podcast, visit our website and be sure to subscribe on iTunes or YouTube. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/flightcastaudio and on Twitter at flightcastaudio. If you have any ideas for the show, please leave them in the comments. Flightcast is brought to you by Linkhouse Media on the web at linkhousemedia.com. We can always use your financial support to keep us going, and one way to do that is to head over to flightcast.audio/shop and get your very own Flightcast hat, t-shirt, and other accessories. You can also donate by visiting flightcast.audio and clicking the yellow donate button in the sidebar. And to cover the fine print, Flightcast is not affiliated with Infinite Flight or Flying Development Studio. I'm Jason Rosewell. Thanks for listening, and happy landings.
I will shovel sh** just to be around that aircraft.
I learned early on, too, that when your mom sends you to go get the switch that she's going to beat your ass with, don't try to be funny and come back with a wig.
No, because she's going to come back with the tree.
Yeah, she went, and I did that sh**, and she went out to that pear tree and wrapped her arms around that damn thing, uprooted the and swung it like a Louisville slugger.
Yeah,
my eyes just popped out of my head and came back.